Everybody, welcome to Filmmaking Ain't for Pussies. This is episode 17. Hope you all had a great week. Hope you had a great Father's Day. The June gloom update. As I sit here, it is Wednesday the 21st. And beginning last Friday, we started getting sun later in the afternoon. And it stayed with us until sunset. And then we'd wake up the next morning and the marine layer would be in. But as the days have gone by since Friday, the marine layer is burning off quicker and quicker. And as a matter of fact, this morning, there was no marine layer. So, ladies and gentlemen, we might be out of June gloom. Looks real familiar to me. So when you start waking up and there's no marine layer, you know you're headed in the right direction and the May, gray, June gloom is going to disappear. And we will be experiencing wonderful SoCal sunshine. All that sunshine we pay for if you're a resident in SoCal. Yes, we do. We pay dearly. And those of you who are golf fans, over the weekend, the U.S. Open was in L.A., the Beverly Hills part of L.A., which is a little closer to the ocean. And they talked about the marine layer quite a bit. And if you were watching, you could see it. Hopefully, some of you golf fans were sitting there thinking, ah, that's what Dave's talking about, the marine layer. Here's a Ted Lasso cinematography update. I did dig a little bit. Vanessa White was the cinematographer for episode 11 and 12. Episode 12 looked beautiful. It must not have been Vanessa's fault. Maybe color correction, maybe somewhere in post-production. I don't know what happened. But man, if you guys watched episode 11 after the podcast last week, did you see what I was talking about? In one scene, dark, light, it was crazy. But the same woman shot 11 and 12, so obviously she knows what she's doing because 12 was beautiful. Well, there's your update. I told you I'd do it, and I did it. All right, casting stories. I have a few for you. Just a quick little bit of history. You know, I played the part of the serial killer in my film. You know, we didn't watch dailies, so I had no idea how I was doing. I was relying upon the cinematographer and my fellow actors to let me know. You know, are you feeling it? How do you feel about my performance? And as long as I wasn't getting any negative comments, I felt good. The movie went to the editor and he did a first pass without any help from me. I just let him do his thing. He's an editor. I'm not an editor. And when I saw that first pass, I knew we had a movie and I also knew that I had hit it out of the park. Surprisingly, I got so much positive feedback from my acting that I asked the editor to take some of my better scenes from the hike and put them on a reel for me that I could use to send out. And he did that. So, you know, I'm not a dumbass. I'm not going to go up to LA having done one feature film that I directed, duh, and knock on agents' doors. So I just decided to tip my toes into the water to see how I would do. And of course, all this is realizing that all I'm going to apply for are bad guy roles. I know my wheelhouse. So you go on backstage.com. If you want to be an actor, you can go on Backstage, and that's where people post their projects. You know, there's movies, there's videos, there's plays. It's just a great website for creative types. So typically what you do if you're an actor, you'll go through Backstage and you'll apply for this role, apply for that role. Sometimes they will ask you to read from the script and there will be a PDF that you can download. And then you just take your phone and record yourself doing this little scene. Some of them don't require that. Some of them, you just give them a cover letter and they can look at your reel. And you know, when I started out, all I had was From the Hike. That was my reel. And then if they're interested in you, they will send you a message through the website. You know, after you get the message through the website, it's up to you if you want to divulge your personal information and get off the website as far as communication goes. Sometimes actors will get a message from a director or a producer of a project, and it's like they don't even need you to audition. They just send you a letter, we would like for you to do this role. And those are great. When that happens, when you get a message and somebody just offers you the role, you don't have to apply. They just saw you and they liked what they saw, so they reach out. That's amazing when that happens. So that was my first job. This older director, this older writer-director, just sent me a note, said, I want you for this role. It's going to pay $150 a day. Damn. All right. That sounds good. And we're going to need you for 2 days. Oh, shit. That sounds even better. So the role that I played was a banker. All right. So look, you know, I did it for the money. I knew I was being miscast. But if I put myself in his shoes, I think he was probably looking at reels of guys my age, specifically. That's what he was looking for. And I think he was looking more for acting skills. I don't think he was looking for a look. Because if you watch the film, and it is a feature film, and it is on Tubi, if you watch the film, he had, I think he told me he had 30 speaking roles. And, you know, this was his first feature. And he was older than me. And he was from the Middle East. And the cinematographer was from the Middle East. A lot of the crew was from the Middle East. The sound guys were local from LA. But my point is, he had 30 speaking roles. And if you base all those roles on a look, that archetypical look, he didn't play by those rules. I think he's one of these directors who just looked at talent, line readings, your acting technique, whatever it was. He didn't care about look. This feature film, he was going to send it to film festivals, but it turned out so bad that I don't think he considered film festivals. But Tubi took it off his hands. You know, I don't know the guy well enough to say, hey, did they pay you money for this? I don't know how Tubi works. All I know is there's a billion platforms out there and they're all looking for content. So to all you filmmakers out there, I don't care what you do, you can get it up and you can get it seen. I mean, that's the bottom line, if that's what you want to do. I'm not shopping the hike to Tubi or any of the other platforms. To be honest with you, after this podcast is done, I'm not looking backwards at the hike anymore, period. My whole being is always moving forward, always move forward. So this will be my last foray into all things the hike. Believe me when I tell you that. I actually want to get the hell away from it. Back to my casting story. So this gentleman cast people against look. Sometimes he played the look. The police captain in this movie, he looks like a police captain. I'm not going to divulge the movie because it's so bad, and I don't want to badmouth a fellow filmmaker. I mean, it's bad. It's a bad movie, and that's not badmouthing him. Bless his heart, he got the movie done. He paid 30 people $150 a day, and the leads worked every single day. He rented a studio. Well, he didn't rent the studio. He rented a soundstage at a studio. Yeah, that had to have been super expensive just outside of LA, and that's actually where they shot. My scene was in this studio, and in the studio, it was the police detective's office. Now, I just heard through the grapevine, it was thousands of dollars to rent that studio for 8 hours. My hat's off to the guy. He got it done. But the movie is really bad, and my performance is horrible. He's a first-time director, and he knew he was in trouble, so he only shot like one take, maybe two, and then moved on. And, you know, that's what you got to do. If you have a long script, if you don't have many days to shoot, you just got to bust ass and just get it done. So he actually did do two takes on me because he had notes for me. You know what his notes were? His notes were speak faster and look at the police detective. Look right into his eyes. All right, back to Juan. Let's go, everybody. That was it. And after he told me that, I did what he told me and we shot it. And he says, let's go, move on. Now the next day, actually it was 2 days later, we were at the, if you remember, we were at the office building where his cinematographer worked during the day. So remember when we were talking last season about writing, what are your resources? And he had this resource. So his cinematographer worked in an office building and they were allowed to go in there on the weekends and shoot. And that's what they did. So my second day, we were in that building. Then I did I can't remember if the video for Ryan was first, and then the short film Lines. Those were perfect. I mean, they cast me perfectly because I was a grouchy Clint Eastwood Gran Torino, get off of my lawn. That's the role I played in Ryan's little video. And then in Lines, I was a drug dealer, and both directors were great. Then next was another one of those, hi, Dave, we want you for this role. And it was a female director. I was playing like an evil dad, a really mean dad. That's cool. I'd cast myself as a mean dad. So she basically reached out to me, gave me the role, told me that she had, you know, the rest of her cast, and that she would get back to me as far as getting together and having like a table read through Zoom or in person, either one. So the next day, I get an email from her, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, "Hi, Dave. Unfortunately, it's not going to work out with you in this role because my lead actress really wants her dad to do the role. And he doesn't have any acting experience, but she's really pressuring me to cast him. And I really like her, so that's the way we're going to go. Sorry for the inconvenience. I hope you understand. Best wishes." I'm paraphrasing. Wow. The moral to this story is you may encounter somebody who wants to take over your movie. Now, this was for a short. This was not a feature. So obviously, this actress who was playing the lead flexed her mighty muscles and basically extorted the director. Now, I did write her back and I said, "No problem. You know, I totally understand, but I'm sorry for you that you're going to let an actress take over your film. This is your film, not hers. You're in LA. Do you think you can't find another actress?" You know, there's so many layers to this. Okay, first there's the layer that she's allowing a cast member to use their power and their role to dictate what they want. And to me, they're taking over the film. You know, if you're a director, you cannot let that happen ever. Are you kidding me? Here's a little aside. The cinematographer who shot The Hike during production, we got along great. Everything was cool. But we did not invite him into editing. And he took offense to that. So where I'm coming from is, dude, last time I looked, you were a cinematographer. Why do you want to say in editing? Now, we didn't speak. I heard from the editor. So he goes around me to the editor and reaches out to him to say, "Hey, can I come in and see a first cut, second cut, whatever?" Now, I'm assuming a cinematographer isn't going to look at performances. He's going to look at his work. So if you have a scene and it's a close-up on Derek and maybe it's a moving shot and in take number one, Derek gives a great performance, but there's a little camera jiggle. There's a little camera, just a little thing that doesn't look that bad. Then in take number two, the actor who plays Derek, his performance wasn't better, but man, that camera was steady. It was perfect. Now, what take do you think the cinematographer is going to want in the movie? So as far as I'm concerned, my cinematographer wanted to take over my film. Now, luckily for me, my editor, him and I were very tight. So he came to me right away. It's like, "Dave, dude, he wants in. He wants in on editing." I just shook my head and said, "Hell no." He never did reach out to me. I guess he accepted it and moved on. But listen to me when I tell you, there will be people who will try to flex their power and they will try to manipulate you when it comes to your movie. Please, dear God, don't let that happen. Fire whoever it is. Now, in my case, all the work was done. I'm not going to fire him. But you know what? We will never work together again. He's not on my Christmas card list. I can tell you that. And it's a shame because we got along great and I respect the hell out of him. He's a great worker. He did an amazing job on my movie. I would love to work with him again, but that is so unfucking professional. The other level that this young woman doing this short had to reconcile was that whole thing about a movie is only as good as its bad guy. Now, I hope to hell that this guy did a good job for her, that he looked mean as hell, that he pulled it off. But you know, if you subscribe to that, if you subscribe to your bad guy is just as important as your leads, as far as casting goes, as far as acting goes, then, you know, she compromised herself in that way as well. Okay, one more story. This was just 2 weeks ago. I applied for a role and it was a story about a guy stalking a woman and then the woman turns the tables on him. Now that was like the log line. That's all he gave in the backstage ad or his backstage post. That was it. So I read that. It's like, I'm in. I need this. I want this. Because that's a great. A stalker stalking a woman and she turns the tables on the stalker. Love that. Okay, first of all, he sends me a message and asks, "Are you available tomorrow or the next day? Let me know in the next 2 days what time is good and I'll call you." I write him back. Give him some times. Crickets. He doesn't call. So like 4 days later, he calls and I miss the call, but he leaves a message. "Dave, sorry, it's pre-production. I'm really super busy. Let me know when we can talk and I'll call you back." I text him back. Crickets. He returns my text days later, and he attaches the script. You know, in the body of the message, it's like, here's the script, look it over, let's talk tomorrow. I read the script. This character that I'm wanting to play was the stalker. And without giving the entire story away, let me just say that the stalker ended up being a real estate agent. That was his job. So I told my wife that. And the first thing out of my wife's mouth is, you can't play a real estate agent. You would never sell a house. Actually, strike one is he's so unprofessional. He doesn't do what he says he's going to do. Mean what you say and say what you mean. Strike number two, the stalker, his occupation is a real estate agent. Okay, I don't have the looks for a real estate agent. Now, stalkers come in all sizes and shapes. You could have a pretty boy as a stalker. Shit, how many of you women have been stalked by good-looking men? I'm sure tons of you fall in love with you and, you know, won't leave you alone. So that's miscasting, putting me in that role. Okay, and here's the kicker. In the script, when she turns the tables on him, he melts like the biggest pussy on this planet. Now, just, if you have my looks, you're not going to wilt under pressure. You're not going to act like the biggest wuss. You're not going to rat somebody out. If somebody puts a gun to your head, you're not going to start crying like a baby. You're going to look him in the eye and say, fuck you, pull the trigger, you motherfucker. I'm telling you this story because of his unprofessionalism and his miscasting. Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a filmmaker. I don't want to badmouth filmmakers. I appreciate all of them. And if they get their movie made, my hats are off to all of them. But, you know, you got to call it like you see it. To me, he's making a huge mistake in offering me this role because of my look. I don't look like a real estate agent, and I don't look like the kind of guy who would fold. All right, and that just happened a couple of weekends ago. I honestly wrote him back, and I told him what I just told you. I thanked him, I wished him well, and I told him, I think you're miscasting me in this role, so I'm going to decline it because I want you to find somebody who can pull this off. You can find a look that can pull this off, like I just said to you. You know, to be a stalker, you don't have to look mean and intimidating like me. And if you get somebody who kind of looks normal and he folds under the pressure, I could buy that. I could buy that archetype. But that's like thinking Jason Momoa would take a role where he would just wilt and fess up to this or that. And, you know, somebody puts a gun to his head and he's going to start crying. No, 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 no. You will never see that happen. And now what you've all been waiting for. The websites where you can post your project and you will get tons and tons of responses. I used Breakdown Express. You will get SAG actors and non-SAG actors interested in your project. If you decide to cast a SAG actor, you are going to have to abide by the SAG pay scale. And they do have different pay scales for different size projects. It's entirely up to you. If you want to wade through all the red tape and jump through the SAG hoops, feel free. I personally was looking for non-union actors. So that was Breakdown Express. And then the others are Actors Access and, of course, Backstage.com, which is where I have my profile. So you can post your projects and best of luck to you. You're going to get a ton of responses. It'll be like looking for a needle in a haystack. When you're looking for that perfect actor, when you see that headshot for the character that you created, and it's just, at that moment, it's amazing. It's like, oh, that's you. You're the one. It's so fun. Man, this one ran long. So I hope you all have a great week. And always remember, be a lion, not a sheep. Later.